Blog Talk Radio.
I think we're live.
It's amazing, I'm the reason everybody fired up this evening. I'm exhausted, barely breathing, holding on to what I believe. And no matter what, you'll never take that from me. My rain is as far as your eyes can see. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing. I'm a monster, I'm a killer. I know I'm wrong, yeah. I'm a problem that I never ever be solved.
And good evening, and welcome to the third season of the Knicks at Night Show. First off, I just want to thank everyone who has downloaded us or who has continued to call or support us in any way. Thank you. I appreciate all of your downloads and all of your continued support. I'm Frank Nutt. I'm joined by my good buddy, Mr. Sean Aquino. Peter Attori is on the line. Tom Boff will be joining us shortly. We are back. 2015 Knicks season can't come soon enough. We will be taking your calls tonight, 347-637-3680. As well as previewing the Knicks 2015 campaign. It's been a long time since our last show, but we've got a lot to cover. This podcast will be available for download immediately following tonight's show on Stitcher and iTunes. Follow all of us on Twitter, at Frank Nutt, at Tom Baffa. I'll have Sean and I'll have Peter give out their Twitter handles in just a couple seconds. So first I want to bring on my good buddies, Mr. Sean Aquino and Mr. Peter Attori. How are you doing tonight, guys?
What's up, guys?
Woo!
It's good to be back. It's good to be back.
Yes. I'm pumped up,
so,
man.
Not too much, man. Actually, I got Tom right here, too, so we'll bring Tom on the line. What's up, Tom?
Hey,
how you
Tom.
Doing, man?
Tom in
Hello,
the house.
Hello, everyone. Good evening.
Tom.
Good
Tom's making
Welcome
millions. He's got no time for us.
Anyway.
Out of retirement, everyone. We are out of retirement.
Well,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, I think we learned a lot by last year because we had about 25 shows before the season started. And the Knicks won like 17 games. So, you know what?
Yeah,
I figure we have one show before the preseason starts and we'll see what happens. So let's kick this off right away. Let's go around the horn and let's get just each of our thoughts on Summer League and what you guys thought about Summer League. And then we'll kind of get into, you know, free agency, the roster, all that stuff coming up. So, Sean, what'd you think of Summer League as a whole, the guys that we brought in, guys you may have liked, guys you may have not liked? What was your take on Summer League?
Well, first off, I just kind of, you know, I'm not big time into self-promotion, but I have to announce that Peter Turi does have a brand new Twitter handle. Mine's at SFK34, but I think, Pete, do you have a new Twitter handle? I think I don't see
it. Yeah,
I just
changed it.
What is it?
Changed it. It's Pete _ Arturi, Arturi.
Oh, very nice.
Getting corporate on us here, Pete. Getting corporate
Yay,
on the Twitter
Peter.
Handle.
Very cool. Well, good. Very good, Pete. All right. Well, yeah, let me jump into it, man. I mean, yeah, we haven't done a show since, I think, a couple of nights before the draft, and we did our mock draft, and the number 4 pick went to Frank, and Frank, you selected Kristaps Porzingis, and you know what? We got to see him play a couple games in Summer League. I was lucky enough, along with our buddy Greg, to go down to Vegas and check him out, and I think what shocked us the most about his play was his defensive ability, his ability to move his feet, to defend in the pick and roll, to block shots at the rim. I think he only played maybe 20 minutes a game, but he averaged about 2 blocks a game. He struggled a little bit with rebounding the basketball. Maybe his hands aren't strong enough yet. Probably has to deal with his body size. At the time, he weighed 220. I think we were reporting that he's weighing about 232 now. So Porzingis is what stood out to me the most about Summer League. And, of course, on the other side, the other stuff, with Jerry Grant, he got a steal in the trade for Tim Hardaway. Was great. The way he attacked the basket was terrific to see. It's been a long time since they had a point guard that attacked the rim. So I think that was terrific. Thanasis looked his usual self, a little bit out of control. Defensively, he has upside. But it's going to be interesting to see if Thanasis makes the club. He's pretty much the 15th man today. But I think those three guys really stood out to me the most. And obviously, there are, you know, our two first-round picks and Thanasis, our second-round pick from last year. So, I mean, I am super high on Porzingis now. I could see what all the scouts saw, and I just think that we have a lot to look forward to in this preseason to see how those guys develop along.
All right, Pete, what'd you think about Summer League?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm happy to be back talking to everybody, and I'm looking forward to the season, no doubt about it, especially any kind of basketball. You know, Summer League's hard to judge. You know, you really don't know the talent. Some of your top picks are playing against inferior talent. So I was impressed with Porzingis. I think there's a lot of pressure on him to be good, and there's a lot of people who are going to want him to be bad and say, look, he's a bust. But, you know, look, he's long. He's obviously really long, and he can defend with just putting his hands up. Not even blocking a shot, he can intimidate. And even, I think, even in the post, I think he's going to be able to turn and shoot without even bringing his arms down. He's that tall. So I'm looking forward to watching him all year, and especially tomorrow night, and take it from day one. And that's it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's definitely tough to judge Summer League. Tom, what do you think about Summer League?
I like it. I enjoyed it. I'm optimistic for the season. We have a nice young team coming in this year, so that's going to be a plus. I think we can make some noise. We have to see how everyone meshes together, and if everything on paper comes to fruition. So, I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
I agree with everybody. I don't want to repeat everything that everybody said. I agree with everybody.
Right. Yeah.
Just a fun fact. Tom's making $60 million a year. Everybody know that. Put it out there.
Who's making $60
million? Tom.
Oh, yeah.
$60 million.
Yeah. Bob, he hasn't been around. All of a sudden he shows up. He's got a lot of money in the bank.
I'm the guy now.
The question I have for Tom is, what do you do with all the text messages? Because you rarely respond. But, like, I know you're on there. You haven't thrown yourself off of the text message list yet.
No, I'm on it. I'm on it. I'm a silent onlooker.
You have like
1,200. Huh?
I was going to say, do you have like 1,200 unread text messages or something from the last three months?
Yeah. I'm hoarding them. I'm hoarding them. And when the Knicks win the championship, I'm going to open up all the text messages and go all the way back and read everything. So,
yeah.
Hopefully in the next couple of years, I get to open that thread.
Tom, you just made a great point, though, about we have a young team. I mean, I remember three years ago when we started this podcast.
We're the old
team. We talked about that. We said, how come we can't get draft picks? How come we can't do this and that? And now we're almost developing our own farm system with a team in the D League.
We're too young. We're too young now.
Yeah.
There's no experience on this team. We need veterans. What are we doing? This is
Big 360, yeah. Big 360.
It's going to be
I think that's good, though, because it's – in the NBA today, I mean, you get it's a young man's league. I mean, you hear guys say that all the time. Sam Mitchell says that all the time. I mean, you know, a lot of ex-NBA players say that. It's a young man's league. I mean, obviously you can't come straight from high school anymore, but guys coming from, you know, 1 year out of college. I was watching the Sixers play tonight, and Shaquille Okafor, I mean, he looks like an NBA player. He was making Marcin Gortat look like, you know, he was standing still defensively. And Gortat's not a bad defender one-on-one in the post. And he was making him look silly. So, you know, these young guys coming, it's exciting. You know, it's difficult. I was reading some quotes from Aaron Aflalo the other day. And he was saying how he's, you know, it's definitely a learning curve to learn the triangle offense. And that's that's a thing that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how some of these young guys pick up, you know, to the triangle, because it is a different system. A lot of NBA teams, you know, they have a pick and roll offense, or they have a spacing concept, and they have different sets that they do off of those spacing concepts. But for the most part, none of them really run an offense like the Knicks will. So for these guys to come in, you know, a lot of young guys, obviously Porzingis has been a pro for 4 years now, but the NBA is different. And it'll be interesting to see how Grant, you know, a four-year college player, takes the transition. I'm sure he'll be fine. You know, but I'm just really interested to see these young guys come together. And, you know, tomorrow night will be a good time, because it'll be the first time we get to see all the pieces kind of, you know, coming together.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
Have they announced the starting five yet?
They have not.
Earlier today they said they haven't yet, so I'm just curious.
Yeah, they
well,
have, they
said
have
that,
three.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, Frank.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're going to start Lopez, Melo, and Calderon, and they're kind of trying to figure out the next two pieces.
I feel like they have to start Porzingis, at least for this stuff.
I mean, the beginning part,
just to test them out, you know, in front of a crowd with you know, the three other starters that are going to start. Why not?
Yeah.
Here's a perfect opportunity.
As long as the Flalo's not in there, I mean, it doesn't. Because to me, he's a deadlock starter for day one. So whoever else you throw in is, you know, let's just see how they respond. I wouldn't mind if they started Grant and Porzingis, or if they start, you know, Langston or, you know, Galloway or, you know, Serafin or O'Quinn. It doesn't really matter to me. I just want to, whatever they do, I want to see consistency.
Now,
I see
2K has O'Quinn starting. I don't know if that has anything, you know. I'm
really?
Just saying. Yeah.
Well,
interesting.
2K
with
had
who?
The
it's Calderon, Melo, Porzingis, Lopez, and O'Quinn. I don't know why.
What? Whoa.
Weird, right? I don't know. I'm looking at it now.
I don't know, man.
Weird. Well, at least
2K
they got
paint,
right?
Right? 2K was able to
predict
the blue lane coming back, right?
That's pretty awesome.
Right. Yeah,
is
well,
tomorrow
actually,
hurt right now or something?
Yeah, it's hamstring.
Yeah, maybe that's why they have him as a starting right now.
Oh,
that's a lot. That,
yeah, who knows?
Well, actually,
it's
so
a weird group,
funny
though.
Story about the paint. EA Sports actually reaches out to all the teams in the NBA, and they ask if there's, you know, any uniform changes, any court changes that we should know about before we make the video game. So apparently they reached out to the Garden in like mid-July, and they made the decision to go back to the blue paint, which I know is a little bit before my time and Tom's time. You know, really the heyday at the Garden when the paint was blue. You know, in the mid '90s.
That's pretty awesome.
But it's pretty
great.
Cool the way, you know, they give a heads up to EA Sports, which is kind of cool.
Right.
You know, just like
nothing like those orange jerseys and that blue paint.
Can't
wait to win no games this year.
All right, so let's talk about some roster moves. We'll go around and just give a roster move that you're excited about. You know, I'm sure we can all pick a different one, one or two. So Pete, go ahead. What are some roster moves that you are excited about this summer?
I like the mixture of young and old. I actually like Serafin a lot. I think he's going to be a very good backup for the Knicks. I really do. It's going to allow the Knicks to stay big when Lopez comes out, and I think that's very important. Of course, I love having Lopez and O'Quinn. O'Quinn's got to boost his numbers with more playing time, so let's see if he can do that. I think he can, but you just never know when guys have to play more minutes and do things that they're not used to. You kind of want to sign somebody and have them do what they do, and that's what I'm hoping O'Quinn can do, but love Jerry and Grant, but you know, rookies, you never know with rookies. If you hit a wall, they could just fold under the lights. Let's hope that doesn't happen. Derek Williams, I'm a little suspect over, but I think that he can run and gun. He'll be a highlight reel. I don't want to count on defensively, but I think you could see Williams and Melo in the front court together a couple times. So I think they're very versatile, this team. I mean, you can move guys all over the court at different times. I think that's what, from the interviews I watched, that's what they want. And it's important to get Porzingis proper minutes. I think he should start. make teams adjust to him. And I think I actually think that they could be a good team. But you know what? I thought that last year was so strong. That kind of blew up.
Remember
my
when
face,
we first
so.
Started this and they were so good?
Yes, I do.
That was the best.
Yeah, when Melo was at the four, I remember that.
Yeah.
No, you guys,
yeah,
remember when
we
used
so
to
damn
do
old.
The,
you know?
Remember when we did the show on, what was the one where you would...
Spreecast.
Spreecast. Spreecast. That was the year before the 54 win season. That was interesting.
Did you see Knicks made Mike Miller the coach of the D-League?
Yeah, but not the Miller that you're thinking of.
No, not the Mike Miller the player. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Just saying.
Yeah, no, it's a good move. Anytime you can bring someone in from...
We didn't say it. Sorry.
No, anytime you can bring somebody in from a great organization like the Spurs, I mean, that's, you know, I think that's a positive move.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that people are always critiquing Phil Jackson, and I think that this shows that he didn't pick somebody from his, you know, cadre of assistant coaches, the Craig Hodges, these types of guys. I mean, D-League last year, he picked the guy that Allen Houston suggested, you know, his old college teammate. And Kevin Wooded, who obviously they were one of the worst teams in the D-League last year. And it was a guy who didn't know the triangle, who somehow was trying to teach people the triangle. So that wasn't built to last. But the Mike Miller move, to me, makes it seem like, as we know, the Spurs offense does incorporate a little bit of the triangle offense in snippets with high pick and roll. And maybe that is a sign of things to come. One can only hope. I don't know, but I think like Pete just said, the versatility the Knicks were able to gain from the moves this offseason, you have two guys in Derek Williams and Carmelo Anthony who play best when they are power forwards, but they're serviceable, or at least Melo is serviceable offensively as a three. So if, you know, looking at your matchups, you could put Carmelo or Derek Williams at the four whenever the hell you want to and have, you know, and have an advantage, but if you want to play traditionally, you have five guys. You have five legit bigs. Let's compare it to last year. Jason Smith, Quincy AC, Andrea Bargnani, Amari Stoudemire, and Cole Aldrich, okay? These are your five guys playing the bulk of your minutes at the four and the five. And now you have Kevin Seraphin, Colin Quinn, Kristaps Porzingis, and one of the most underrated defensive centers in the league, Robin Lopez. That is a huge upgrade, and it prepares yourself if you get hurt. And on top of that, if someone else gets hurt, you could play Carmelo at the four, Derek Williams at the four, and maybe move out Aaron Afalo to the three. And you hit it right on the head, Pete. The versatility the Knicks were able to gain this offseason is what makes me so happy. I mean, yes, Derek Williams is statistically the worst defensive small forward in the NBA. Okay, that's like my one questionable move of this offseason. But, you know, besides that, Derek Williams played really well at the four for the last 2 months of the season with Sacramento. He's had three coaches in as many years, and maybe a structured system. He's always been a good cutter, and he shot 31% from three last year. If he could get that up to 35, Derek Williams could end up being somehow, so another versatile piece. I'm not saying he's my favorite move. By far, he's not. But I just think overall, if you put all the moves together, the Knicks just gained so much in versatility. That's what stood out to me about this offseason.
Tom, what was your favorite move about the offseason?
I really liked the acquisition of Lopez. I think he's gonna be the solid center we've been looking for, who could play the defense. He's kind of like, I mean, he's like a poor man's Tyson Chandler. But Tyson Chandler was great when we had him here, when he was playing at his peak. He wasn't a scorer, but he was playing defense and he was ripping boards, and that's what Lopez does.
Right.
So, that was our biggest problem last year was people penetrating the middle. I think he's going to help that tremendously. Like, we really didn't have, like, that marquee big man, and I think he's the guy that's going to fit perfectly in that role. You know, I know he's not too high profile, but he could play the position. We have a true center. He's a true center.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if I could piggyback, if it's all right, I mean, if I can mention briefly, Aaron Afalo is a guy who, to me, is a career. I mean, the first 3 years of his career, he only averaged like 3-5 points a game because he was only playing like 10 minutes a game in Detroit. But since he's been a guy who's played 25 minutes plus, the guy's averaged 14 points a game. So that's something that Amon Shumpert can never gauge.
Right.
Don't even say that name. And J.R. Smith gave us 18 on the upside, but 13 on the low side. So say Afalo can come in and average 15 to 16 a game, which is very, very plausible
right.
to me, and play solid defense. That is a shooting guard that we've been needing for so long, you know. And he's a guy that could post up in the mid-range, which is he's super well-suited for the triangle. And he's a knockdown 39 to 40% career three-point shooter. And that's what we've always said. You put Carmelo, he needs to be surrounded by shooters, guys that
right.
are going to make you pay if you double him. And Robin Lopez is a much better passer than Tyson Chandler ever was, or anybody on the Knicks roster last year. So I think the passing and the ability to shoot around Carmelo has improved like almost night and day from last year. And I just thought that the follow move for only $8 million when Wes Matthews is making $15 million was just a great deal.
Yeah, I thought that it was a good move. I wasn't floored by any move that Phil Jackson made this summer, but I'm not going to sit here and say that I was, you know, upset, because he went out and he upgraded a team. You know, in doing so, didn't handcuff us going forward. I think that's something that the Knicks have
right.
never been able to do. They've always sacrificed either future or anything to get the right now. You know, in Afalo's year, the second year is a team option or a player option, I believe. The same thing with Derek Williams. You know, Lopez's deal is fair, I'd say, considering, you know, John Henson just signed a $10 million a year deal. You know, a lot of guys are getting money now. This is the new NBA. This is the, you know, next year, I think, you know, you're going to see numbers soar. And, you know, we have Lopez locked in at his number, which I don't think is a bad number. You know, Afalo, maybe, you know, maybe you re-sign him. But if not,
you're going to have an additional $19 million as well, no?
Right, right. And you have the $19 million, you know, depending on what else happens, to go and maybe, you know, get somebody else. The acquisition
that
I like.
Who is that somebody else? I don't mean
there's a couple people. You could probably get two guys for $19 million to be a huge part of your team.
Sure.
Throw
Throw
some names.
I don't have anything.
I don't have
anybody won game yet.
Segway. It's fine.
Yeah.
Segway.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, it's fine.
Right,
dude. I mean,
then what position?
Yeah,
what position are we going after?
Point guard.
I think Jerry Grant's going to be our point guard. I think Jerry Grant's going to be our point guard of the future. But we'll see. You're right. But the only guy I would want to pay is Mike Conley. And to me, there's no way he's going to leave Memphis or he's going to get that max money next year. Other than that, there really isn't a service. I'd rather see – I think at least the good thing is that we'll know if Jerry and Grant is the point guard of the future. You know what I mean? What kind of deal if we need it by the end of the year? So, yeah, but you're right. It could be someone else. But I think that this is what's cool about what the Knicks said too, is like you've now put the role players in place. Sometimes – you have, like, stars, and then you have to go, and it takes 2 years to get these role players. But what the Knicks could do if they make the playoffs this year, if they do, is put themselves in a position where they become more attractive to a big-man guy, where the role players are already in place. So if the Knicks just, you know, if basically at $19 million, if they stretch Jose Calderon, that puts them to, like, $23 million. And then if they let someone, like, they maybe let some guys – you know, trade some guys for nothing. You can get to that $25 million magic number, which would be enough to pay Durant. I'm not sure it's going to happen, but that's obviously, to me, what the Knicks are going to try to do.
Right, there's a chance.
And then there's a chance. And then by doing that, you have $25 million to spare, especially if Jaren Grant shows that he's the point guard that you need. And you can move Calderon and stretch him just straight out. It doesn't even matter to you. You know what I mean? So I think that's what they're going to do. I think next summer is a summer they're going for the big fish, but if they strike out, oh well, but it's not a big deal because I trust in Phil. You know, he'll get other guys to help make the team better for whatever money we have left. And guys that fit the system and team first guys. I mean, look at the chemistry these guys have developed throughout training camp already. They seem to really get along and they seem to understand each other. And the roster definitely fits to me. And that's why I'm happy that we're building the team the right way moving forward. And as you said, Frank, not putting ourselves into long-term problem contracts. You know, Kyle Quinn for $4 million per for the next 4 years is an awesome deal.
Yes, I agree. I thought that was Phil's best signing of the summer. To be honest, I mean, I thought the dollar that you're paying O'Quinn, it's funny. I do. I play DraftKings a lot for football, and you're always looking for that times three value. You know, you're trying to get three times the value for the money that you put in. And to me, O'Quinn is like a guy that, you know, yeah, he may give you $8 to $10 million worth of value if he gets the time, and you're paying him four. So I think that puts the Knicks in a plus spot, the same thing with Seraphin. I think he was probably one of the better signings of the offseason too. I've said this before, and I'll say this probably another 30 times on this show. My only issue is that I can't understand why a team who knows the analytics and knows that Carmelo Anthony is better at the four would go out and get a guy who plays exactly like Carmelo Anthony, you know, a poor defensive three and a better four in Williams. And then you go get Seraphin, O'Quinn, and Lopez, you know, plus drafting Porzingis. I mean, you basically loaded up the strongest part of the Knicks roster this year is going to be their front court. And now you just brought more people to get in the way of putting Carmelo Anthony where he has played best. That's the only thing that I can't wrap my mind around. I don't know. That's me. To me, that's the only thing that doesn't make sense.
Pete, do you want to take that one, Tom, anybody? Because I got something to say, but I don't want to go again.
Pete, go for it. I'll say something. I mean, you know, Frank, you're right. I would think you're right. And the thing is that they're given every indication that Melo's going to play the three, and then you hear conflicting reports that he's going to play the four. So, yeah, I think everybody's wondering why. But if you look at Phil's old teams, they're all big, you know, with Gasol and Bynum, and then you can go Shaq and you know, the big guys, and then you go back to Chicago days with Luke Longley and Horace Grant. So you can
sure.
I mean, he likes to go big. And he's going to have a ton of bigs now. That means, to me, more that Melo is going to be, you know, flying around the court, cutting to the basket, coming off screens and stuff like that. But then you hear stuff like that he's going to play the four. So I'm confused as well. But I like the fact that they have so many bigs. I really do. And it gives you the chance to stay long. And you know, when someone's in foul trouble or someone's tired and needs to come out, you can just put somebody else in who's just as long, who adds a little bit different of an element, and that can allow you to stay big. I think that's very important. I really do. We haven't had that in a long time. We've had Tyson, and then somebody comes out, and you got, you know, a 6'9 guy. Now we're going to have guys that are 7 foot, 6'9, 6'10, you know, 7'3. That are going to be able to do things in the block and allow Melo to roam.
This changes so drastically in such a short amount of time, doesn't it? From 1 year to the next, it's just complete, like I was speaking about before. 1 year, it's all old veterans who burn out in the beginning of the playoffs. Now we have all young guys. 1 year, we had all guards. Now we have all bigs. It's just like night and day.
Totally different team.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That's a good point, Tom.
Well, does it make
sense
that Melo is going to play more of a perimeter role, you know, flying around the court, cutting through the basket and stuff like that? Or do you guys think that he's going to be set up in the post, in the pinch post?
I don't think he should be in the post.
Personally, that's where he operates, though. He's great at operating down here. But I agree. I mean, if you're going to have so many bigs, I mean,
I'm
curious
to see what
everybody
thinks. Now. Like, you want him to bang in the post and get worn out with all, you know?
I think the pinch post isn't a bad spot for him. I think it's a good spot to operate. I mean, the whole thing with the pinch post that kind of, you know, confuses me a little bit is that we've seen the NBA kind of push towards a perimeter game. Now we got you know, the majority of your offense is working from 18 feet away, 15 to 18 feet away, as opposed to, you know, teams that are really winning right now that are shooting threes or getting to the basket. You know, the pinch post is, it's kind of, it kind of deters from, you know, what's working right now. You know, that's,
how about somebody like Porzingis, who he is the quintessential stretch four, is he not?
Right.
You sure?
Right. Right.
All
right.
I mean, so that answers all the questions right there. Of, to me, this is in my head of where he's going to be, you know, on the perimeter. But I wonder if he's going to be in the pinch post. You're going to have Lopez in the post and then Porzingis in the pinch post and then Melo out in the perimeter in one of the corners kind of roaming around, coming off the screen in different spots at all times of the game. Am I wrong? Or is he going to be in the post? This is what I'm trying to understand.
I think that's not a bad spot for him, Pete.
I think we need Porzingis in the post. We need Porzingis going up against a power forward who, if they're athletic, will bring him inside, and if they're too big, he brings him outside. He's a perfect player for that. Like, yeah, he's a stretch four. You're not going to find – he's too big. We have to exploit other forwards with his size because he's 7'3". Like, no other 7'3" guy in the NBA moves like him.
Then he can pull guys out to the perimeter and open up space for someone like a Derrick Williams.
He can either burn by him or shoot in their face.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a Kevin Durant effect, except for he's 3 inches, 4 inches taller than Kevin Durant. Where he's going to be able to shoot over anybody or bang them in the post.
I'm telling you that he's going to catch the ball and be able to turn and shoot without putting his arms down.
Right.
I think he could do it. I don't know if he's going to do it, but that's what it seems like. He can just turn and hit a nice sweet jumper from 10 feet right away, and I think that's going to cause a lot of matchup problems for other teams.
He's 7'3" with a 7'5" wingspan. Like, he can touch the rim standing underneath the basket.
Yeah. I mean, that's what, again, going back to that versatility, I think you have Porzingis out the three-point line. Robin Lopez is one of the best pick-and-roll big men in the league. Jerry Grant was one of the best pick-and-roll point guards in college basketball last year. The way that he orchestrated that Notre Dame offense, which was a very pro-style, high pick-and-roll, spread-out-the-floor, three-point shooting system, that's another reason why I was excited about that draft pick, because it's a guy that's not a traditional knockdown three-point shooting point guard, but he's got the size of 6'5", the ability to penetrate, and one of the best pick-and-roll guys in the league. So, and Jose Calderon used to be a very good pick-and-roll player. So
sure.
I feel like you have this ability now to incorporate a little mixture of both, and I was really intrigued by the fact that Jerry Grant, in an interview yesterday on KnicksNow.com with Jonah Ballo, said that, you know what, Derek Fisher's giving us the freedom to create and then get into some sets, which we saw them do a little bit more towards the end of last year. But let's be honest, guys, Langston Galloway was a shooting guard in college, and then he was trying to run a point last year. So he was trying to learn how to be a point guard. Shane Larkin was too small to be a true point guard. Now you have guys, Calderon was hurt most of the year. But I'm just saying that I think that now with this setup, you have more versatility in action. So you can go to the pinch post, Carmelo, for isolation. But you might also be able to run pick and roll with Jerry and Grant and Lopez. Jerry and Grant and Porzingis. Jerry and Grant and Carmelo. Or maybe a following Carmelo, who have played together before offensively. And that's where you can spread the ball, the floor out big time. Porzingis can kill you with the three. Calderon can kill you with the three. Afal will kill you with the three. Sasha Vujacic is 6'7". He's always been a knockdown shooter. I don't know what he's going to give us.
And he looked great. He looked great in camp.
He's looked great. Yeah. So now you have these guys that could all shoot 35% plus from three, and you have the versatility to basically run pick and pop with Carmelo and Porzingis, and Kylo Quinn is a great mid-range jump shooter. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying the Knicks have so much versatility, and I don't think they're going to be super committed to the triangle. I think that is going to – I think we're going to see that that's going to change, and the Knicks are going to be, as we saw in Summer League, much more up-tempo. You're going to see Jerry and Grant pushing the ball, and that is why –
And we saw a lot of pick and roll in Summer League as well.
Right.
Sure.
Totally.
And you gotta think that. I mean, who is really? I know I single out Porzingis. He's not the whole team, but I'm just looking at one position. Like, who is he gonna go against as a four? I mean, someone like a Chris Bosh, who's gonna pull out. You know, so it's not like he's going against, you know, Shaq or you know, or another 7-footer. I mean, he's really going to be pulling guys out, creating space. And he can even play a little bit down low with a little bit of a nice soft hook shot and turnaround jumper. I mean, look how Bynum played. I know Bynum is a lot bigger, but Bynum was, you know, he had a nice shot. So I really think you use 7-3 to your advantage and force the other team to get your guy out of the game if he's pulled out and he can't cover out by the perimeter. And, you know, I think we can, to our advantage, there's a lot of stuff the Knicks could do. I just hope that Fisher puts it all together and he doesn't have 75 different lineups.
Yeah.
I was going to say Porzingis, too. Remember when we were talking about drafting him, we saw him as just a skinny guy who was a knockdown shooter from the outside. We didn't picture him as the typical post player in the triangle offense, which is another sign that Phil Jackson selected the best talent on the board. He saw the talent in Porzingis and in Grant, guys that are not traditional triangle fits, and said, I'm picking the best players available here and we'll grow around them. So he believes that Porzingis has a high enough basketball IQ to be able to develop his passing game, develop a post game. But, I mean, he's nearly perfect because in today's NBA, if you're big and you can shoot from the outside, it's way more valuable than being able to post up inside. Especially when you have a guy who could do put in work in the pinch post, and you could run pick and roll with a combo like Grant and Lopez.
Yeah.
So
they're also going to
develop the post game in a couple years, you know.
And they also are going to have three post guys already with Serafin, O'Quinn, and Lopez. I mean, so you already have guys that can post
right.
I'm gonna kind of play devil's advocate a little bit. Now it is good to have versatility and diversify the roster and get guys that do different things. But we've seen the last couple of years now, teams that are winning with an identity, and they're understanding what they do well and then basically doing it better than what everyone else does to win. I mean, you know, I don't even have to talk about what Golden State did last year, but even because we all know their identity. But if you look at the Spurs have had the same identity now for, you know, 3 or 4 years, and then it was a little bit different the 3 or 4 years before that. But for the most part, they have an identity, and it stays the same, and they do what they do well, and that's how they beat people. Now, my question is with this team, what are they going to do better than everyone else? Yes, I understand they're going to be versatile, but I don't know if they have any idea what they're going to do well, what their best rotation and their best lineup is going to
be.
I don't know. But I think that they need to use wisely, you know, the preseason games to figure it out, because, I mean, I was looking at the schedule before, and it doesn't give the Knicks any favors the first month of the season. There's a couple games that are okay, you know, in the beginning. I know they play the Bucks a couple times, who I think are going to be improved. But I know they play the Spurs, they play the Cavaliers, they play a bunch of good teams early on. So they, you know, you can't come out, and if you go 4-10, what's the thought process of these guys that sat on a 17-win season last year? You know, what's going through Galloway and Melo and, you know, and Klay Anthony Early and Calderon? You know, what's going through their heads if they're 4-10 going into December?
You got to be a good defensive team. I think everywhere you listened, they talk about defense. So, you know, defense, obviously they're all talented. Defense is also a mental thing. It's commitment, and it's chemistry, and it's trust. So it's so easy to say all this stuff. If everybody played great defense, every team would be really good. You know, so, I mean, obviously the Knicks don't play good defense. They haven't in years. Now they have different players that hopefully can gel and play great defense together, and that's what it's about, because they're not going to score a ton of points. So they have to really be a good, gritty defensive team, and I think they have some of the players to do it. The question is, can Melo do it? Can the rookies play solid defense, and can Calderon defend somewhat?
Right.
And is a follow over the hill where he can't defend anymore, which I don't think he is, but you just don't know under the lights in New York City and the pressure. You're right, Frank. If they start 4-10, what's the mindset going to be?
Right.
It's a little nerve-wracking.
Rebuild again.
So now,
unanswered questions here. We're all going to be asking questions the first month of the season. Right. They could well start off 4-10, but
I think this is this is the right team right now to let that develop. All right, they start 4-10. You got to let this team grow.
I agree.
You can't just, you know, this is the, you know, every year we panic. We're always in panic mode. But this is the team where, like, we can't hit the panic button because they're young. Again, they have to develop.
True.
The question is Melo going to hit the panic button? That's the question.
What's that?
Is Melo going to hit the panic button? Because that's what it's all about. The other guys are not going to hit panic button.
Hell no.
Melo's going to hit the panic button.
Hell no, he said.
I know. He says a lot of things. We'll see.
He says a lot of shit.
Anyway,
guys, I've got a surprise for you. Joining the Knicks at Night show right now, all the way from Baltimore. It is the infamous Ron from Baltimore. What's up, Ron? How you doing?
Yes. Ron.
How we doing? Boys, how we doing?
Oh, my Great. Lord.
How have you been, sir?
Oh, my goodness. I have to weigh in on tonight. I'm glad you guys are back.
That's nice.
We're glad you called in, man. We're happy to hear your voice.
I want to hear some Ron from Baltimore cautious optimism. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear what you thought of the summer, what you've thought of camp so far, and then what you're looking forward to in these next these next five preseason games.
Yeah. First of all, you guys were talking about Melo. I don't listen to anything Melo says because, I mean, he says a different thing every day, so obviously he can't. He might be the worst, like, person interview because, like, I just, like, don't, like, I don't – whatever he says one day, like, it's like he – I don't – it's just he's such a weird interview. He might be one of the weirdest people I've ever met, but that's the problem. That's the problem, though, because we're relying on this guy to be the leader and actually spread the wealth. So we'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't blame him for last year. I mean, we finally surrounded him with pieces. Hopefully it's the right pieces. That's important. And, Porzingis, I love what that pick represented. The only thing I'm worried about with Porzingis, I think he could be a really good player. I'm just worried about injuries with his body. But I like the fact, supposedly, I saw today he gained, like, 12 pounds of muscle from what I hear.
A lot of big max.
Yeah. Look, man. I mean, we've been down this road before. We knew with free agency we were not going to get the big names. It kind of sucked, but that was the hand we were dealt. I think we rebounded okay. Summer league, I really can't gauge much. Like you guys said. Preseason, like, to me it's important. I mean, like, remember that one year in preseason with Mike Woodson, that one year where he totally like didn't take it serious and like it just set a terrible tone for the season? You remember that?
Yes. Tyson Chandler got hurt. I believe it was against the Nets. And then
sprained his knee or something, right?
It was like
I'm not saying preseason's like the most important thing in the world, but like Mike Woodson like took it as like an absolute joke and like just fooled around and we didn't learn anything about the team, and going into the season they were completely unprepared, and then we went like 3-13. Guys, look, we've been down this road before. Guys, we can't panic. Peter, you are very good. You calm me down. Sean, you calm me down. Frank, you calm me down. We're in this together.
Thanks. I don't do anything for you, Ron. It's fine.
Dude, we're in it together. I mean, you know, we're going to fail with Melo until the end, until it's over, until he's gone. And, look, let's just pray this works. I mean, this is the Eastern Conference, so I think it could work. So we'll see.
Yeah. Hey, Ron, I have a win total at 35.5. What would you take, the over or the under?
Okay, are we assuming health?
Yeah. You can assume any situation you want. You know, whether they're not healthy, whether they're healthy. Your best guess.
I'd say slightly over. I'm not giving them the 50 win seed. I'm not saying that. Like, that's a little nuts. Like, this team, I think, looks on paper like it could be a 500 team in the East. Am I being optimistic? Yeah, because I'm trying to, because otherwise, what the hell are we doing this for? We have to be a little optimistic. But look, if you're putting a gun to my head, over 35, I'll take the over.
Okay, all right. I like to put a gun to your head, so I figured I'd do it one more time.
Especially in Baltimore.
Right.
Oh yeah. Right. Exactly.
Do you have any? Which guy are you most excited to that the Knicks brought in this off season? Which addition did you like the most, Ron?
It's a really good question. I mean, a part of me like wants to say Robin Lopez, but I kind of know what we're gonna get with him. I feel like I like that pickup, but a kind of me like is the most intrigued about Sasha Vujačić. That was an interesting pickup. Like, I don't know, like, obviously the whole triangle thing, the whole Phil thing, but like from everything I've heard from like the media, and like he actually looks like better than he did like with the Lakers. He might actually like contribute. So that was like a sneaky pickup. Like, I didn't even know he was like still like playing basketball.
He is still playing basketball.
Yep. Yeah.
He came out and said he's better than ever.
Yeah. Hold on.
Fisher said that he looks better than he did in the Laker days.
I just want to go into like a 2 minute rant for like 2 seconds. Sure. All right. Now I like Jonah, whatever the hell his last name is, Balo, whatever. Balo, you know, the guy that runs Knicks now. But Jesus Christ, can we just? I would like to just see them miss one shot in a Knicks, you know, in a highlight. You'd think that they don't miss a shot, and then today, you know, I go through my day and I work hard, and you know, I like watching the minute or 2 minute clip that they have. And what do they have today? No offensive sets, no nothing. A freaking shooting competition.
It was like knockout. It was like a 3-point shootout.
Like, oh, okay, great. So I've got Cle Anthony Early and Galloway and somebody else and Porzingis. I think it was Grant against like, you know, four other guys. I'm like, really? Like, first of all, if you're an NBA player and you can't hit an open three without defense in a practice gym, like, you shouldn't be in the NBA. So the fact that's even a thing that they're televised, they're like, hey, Knicks fans, you diehard Knicks fans that, you know, here's a shooting competition from today's practice. You know, we've got a game tomorrow, but here's a shooting competition. Like, come on. Like, give me something. Like,
What's the story with Jonah Balo? So he runs Knicks now. He gets paid by the Knicks, by MSG?
Yeah. I think so.
Yes, yeah.
So he's the only one who runs that side. I never see anybody else on there as well. Like,
Charlie Widows, he still works for the Clippers, too. Okay. I think the two of them do it. But I remember on draft night, when we drafted Hardaway, he and Jonah did it together. I think there's only two guys, pretty much. And that's probably, I know, it kind of seems like it's just a one- or two-man operation, though. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't seem like they have a lot of resources there. Yeah,
I just want to say this really quick, Sean, and not to interrupt you. I mean, I just want to say these two things. I think I was talking to Robin Lumberg about this, I think, like, the other day randomly. Like, I think it's very important. And Robin Lopez, like, that's where it all starts, man. I mean, when you talk about the back line of defense protecting the rim, like, dude, since we haven't had Tyson Chandler, we have not had that. And he made LaMarcus Aldridge a better defender.
Yeah.
So I'm banking on Robin Lopez. And I personally, people might disagree with this, I personally would start Porzingis coming off the bench to start the season.
Okay.
Who would you start at power?
Who would you start? Yeah, who would you start? What would your starting five be?
Yeah, so like, Porzingis, I love the guy, and I just want to take it slow with him. Like, I want to go back and look. Like, did Dirk start his first year in the league? Didn't Dirk come off the bench his first season?
No, he probably did.
That was like 25 years ago. I don't know.
I kind of want to look that up. But anyways, I'm not saying he's going to be the next Dirk, although that's what everybody's saying. But I'm just saying I would start Calderon, Aflalo.
Right.
I would play Melo at the 4, Robin at the 5. Who would I play at the 3? That's a good question. You could do the 2-point guard lineup. But You could do Grant and Calderon and then play Aflalo at the 3, although I don't think that's the – I mean, can Derek Williams play the 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, terrible.
If he can defend.
I honestly, I think The problem with putting Melo and Williams in the lineup together and expecting Melo to be the one playing the four is that I think Melo is a better defender than Williams. So you're probably going to put the quicker perimeter guy. You're probably going to put Melo on him and then have Williams bang around with the four. So, and then probably the better defender is going to guard Melo. So it's really not like Melo's even playing the four, because the better defender is going to guard him and he's going to have to guard the better defender. So I don't know if the two of them playing together is really a plus for Melo. Because teams aren't going to say, oh, you know, Carmelo Anthony, yeah, we're just going to put our slower, you know, worse defender on you. He's probably going to see the better of those two matchups. So I don't know if that helps him at all.
Yeah. I'm thinking about a way. Like, you guys watched the 2012-2013 season when we were at our best, like, offensively.
Right.
Even defensively we were okay with were we a top 10 team defensively back then?
We were 12 and 15.
Yeah, we were 15. We were 15.
But we were second.
Who was the starting three
second,
on that team?
But we were second or third best offensively. I think only behind the Clippers and some other. I think we were like the top three offensive team.
But you remember
Shumpert,
that year.
Shumpert was the starting three on that team.
They had a great start, and they had a 500 season, and then they had a huge winning streak at the end when Melo was out, right, when J.R. Smith went nuts.
Right.
Wait, didn't Ronnie Brewer start the season? When did we bring out the two-point guard lineup? And didn't Ronnie Brewer, like, start, like, the first, like, when we went on that winning streak 8-0, and then he got hurt or something, and then we never saw him?
Yeah,
he did.
Felton, Melo, and Tyson, And then when Ronnie Brewer fell off, because remember, Brewer started the season hitting, like, 40% from three. Once he stopped hitting from three, that's when he dropped off and they cut him. But by the end of the year, Jason Kidd wasn't hitting threes anymore, so Pablo took his spot, starting alongside Felton. Then Shumpert, that was Shumpert's best three-point shooting year of his career. He shot like 37%, and then he was at the three, and Carmelo was at the four. And
every time
you say
Shumpert's name, I gag. All right? So try not to say his name too much.
What do you guys think about Clay Anthony early?
I don't think he's
definitely defense.
Yeah.
He's got to
learn to dribble too. His dribbling skills are not NBA, small forward. I think he'll be okay at the power forward spot, and I love Klee. But I think he needs to, his overall skill needs to improve. He's got athleticism that's NBA worthy. He can shoot the ball when he's open. He can score.
But Frank, don't you think that whole small forward thing of 3 and D, that's the new thing. You play D, you hit the open three. Why can't Klee Anthony really be that guy?
I think that's what they envisioned him to be. I don't know if
he has the body.
The problem is he could have been that guy last year, but he was hurt half the time and didn't.
Yeah, he got hurt. Yeah,
as many minutes as he probably could have. I think the best thing for Klee and Thanasis this year is to go back and forth between the D League and the big league squad. And, do a little bit of both. See some time.
Yeah,
you
can bring
them
up and bring them down. There's no reason you can't do that.
I think they should, because I don't think they're going to see that much time unless somebody gets
hurt.
Yeah,
right. Especially when you get hurt. Like, same thing with, like, soccer and other sports. Once your guy's hurt, like, and you miss time, it takes you, like, a solid month to just get back to normal playing time and playing conditioning. It's almost impossible.
Oh, yeah.
So once the guy's hurt in preseason, It's like a precursor for something in the future.
Yeah. Oh,
Peter, I'm not
going
to lie to you. I watched Amari in the preseason.
Oh, God.
So did I.
That's great.
Amari acts like he's a superstar, superstar veteran who's been through it all. He's like, I just want to be my best. Beast mode. Oh, come on.
Okay.
God. I'm so happy.
He got scored. The Hornets scored on, like, 12 straight possessions when he got in the game.
I saw that. It is 17 points gave up in 10 possessions.
Something like that.
Amari's defense is to charge at the offensive player, and the guy's like, whoa, and then he just runs around them. And you're like, what the hell just happened? Amari charged at the offensive player. He's the worst defender I've ever seen.
That's not Amari's fault, though, because the kid played high school basketball where he didn't have to play defense. He didn't play in college. And then he played under Mike D'Antoni for like 10 years. I mean, the guy doesn't have a chance.
That's true.
You know,
Frank,
I mean,
Frank, you were talking about the Bucks. I got to tell you guys this. There's a video. I don't know. Herring like tweeted it. Like there was a video on NBA.com of like Jason Kidd like coaching Jabari Parker, like on a some like drill like where getting over a screen is hilarious. You guys got to watch.
Really?
I like the Bucks this year. The two teams I hate the most this year are the Bucks. Okay, the Heat are always going to be up there, and I'm sure we'll do a season preview and stuff, and we'll get more into why I hate the Bucks. But I hate how Miami always gets the benefit of the freaking doubt. Gerald Green and Amar'e Stoudemire are two of the worst defensive players in the NBA. Luol Deng was like washed up. Dwayne Wade, one of the worst defensive shooting guards in the NBA statistically, never stays healthy. Hassan Whiteside, like, he averages one assist every five games. He just tackles guys out of nowhere. And people are putting them, they don't have any outside shooting whatsoever. Chris Bosh is their best outside shooter in today's NBA, and they're going to be the second seed, or they're going to be a top three 50-plus win team. I don't get it. Or the Bucks, another team that pretty much can't shoot with Michael Carter-Williams at 14% from three. You know, Chris Middleton is the only really, to me, good shooter they have. These guys are going to win, you know, these guys are going to be huge steps. I don't buy it. The Knicks actually, to me, have better shooting than any of those two teams. And that just gets nobody looks at
that. The Bucks signed Chris Copeland.
They did.
Frank, respond to this guy. Respond. Attack.
Copeland barely played last year.
I'll let him finish.
I know. I was just defending my boy Cope, that's all.
I know.
I have a question for Ron before Frank attacks Sean. I'm proud to say that I don't really listen to a lot of talk radio anymore for my own well-being because I get too frustrated. But I'm curious, what does Lumberg say? I used to listen to him every morning, and I had to turn him off because I find myself yelling at the radio. What does he have to say about the Knicks acquisitions?
Okay, so I'll be honest with you. I take a break. Like, once the Knicks get back into it is when I really get into it. I don't call in as much, except in Baltimore. I call in Baltimore a little bit, but not really New York once the Knicks season. But he's basically, like, I've listened over the past, like, during the NBA draft and lotto. He's basically positive on the Porzingis pick. He's positive on what they've done. But he still believes that best for Carmelo to part ways with the Knicks for the betterment of the franchise and all that stuff. But he still, like, is not giving Phil Jackson any credit, which I understand. I mean, like, I understand you got to wait and see. And he still kills him for the Tyson trade and Calderon. And I mean, he's basically, like, been the same with everybody in the media that kills everything Phil Jackson's done up to this point.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, I mean, you know what? Some of the I don't mind Lumberg. You know, he's a nice guy. Like, a lot of people portray him as a Knicks hater. I don't think he is, to be honest. I mean, it's different when you have guys like, if you listen to Sports Talk Radio in New York, you know the guys that are from New York are New York fans, and then you know the guys that really don't give a shit about the New York teams, and Lumberg is one of those guys that doesn't care about the Knicks. Like, he's not a Knicks fan. He's not a New Yorker. The guy's from Maryland. Like, you know,
he's hosting a radio show. So, like, part of the thing is you have to, like, bring people in, like, and say things.
Of course,
but, like,
right.
But, like, I don't think he hates the Knicks. I don't think so either.
I like his take, though, because he's not overly, I'm a Knicks fan, I'm a Knicks fan. I can't, like, the two things I can't listen to, like, I can't listen to Michael Kay talk about the Yankees. Like, I just can't. I can't do it. You know?
Nobody called
like,
me
I can't.
On the radio, Frank.
Even Kay.
Michael Kay called Frank out on the radio.
He did. He called me out for like a good 20 minutes. That was around the draft.
Even Kay, when he talks about the Knicks, he's so overdramatic about it. He's like, it's like the end of the world over one little thing. It's too much. It's too much. I barely listen to it. Too much for me now.
It's fake.
Yeah.
It's all fake.
You know what I like? You know who I like to listen to? I like to listen to Han because he's fair and objective. I know he's like he doesn't want to toe the company line, but he'll tell you what's going on. I like Herring, man. Like I just like whenever Herring.
He's the best.
Herring's good.
What about Terry Rupica? Is he still on there?
No, God, no.
He's off the air now?
Yeah.
Who's that? Mike Lupica.
Yeah, he got off the air.
He's going to hang out with all his friends. He was friends with everyone. He just, my great friend, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar joining me. My great friend, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Well,
my great friend, Michael Jordan. Like, shut up. Fuck.
Yeah, I know. He calls Charles Barkley Charlie. It's so annoying.
Yeah. Hey, Charlie.
And if the guy's name is Mike, he'll call him Michael. If his name is Michael, he'll call him Mike.
Yeah, he's a pain in the ass. I don't really like him. But, no, I'm just gonna come back at Sean for a second because I know Sean doesn't like the Bucks, and that's okay because I understand why you don't like them. I understand their shooting percentages, blah 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 blah, whatever. But the thing that I like about the Bucks is they are the longest team in the NBA. I mean, they start 6'7", 6'9", 7'1". 6'11", they are so athletic, and you could like me putting on my coaching hat. Like, first of all, I would play a zone with them, and it's not even funny how easily they could be good at a zone. Like, and then you get like, who is guarding them? Like, who, like, unless teams pack it in and force them to shoot, which they will, and then they'll just bring in OJ Mayo and Chris Middleton, and they'll have a field day. But the Bulls knew this last year when they played Michael Carter-Williams in the playoffs, and he still got to the rim whenever he wanted. And now you bring in a legitimate post threat that they didn't have last year in Greg Monroe, who, Greg Monroe's not the greatest, but you know what? He averaged 16-10 last year. I mean, that's something, and defensively he doesn't need to be a monster because you have John Henson, you have, you have Antetokounmpo, you have – now you have Parker, who's another offensive threat. I mean, they are talented, and talent wins in the NBA. So if they win less than 42 games this year, I'd be shocked. Yeah, I'd be shocked.
Well, they just gave up 40 points to the Bulls in the third quarter. I know it's only preseason, but that made me happy. So.
I hate that the Knicks' first game this year is against the Bucks It is. It's in Milwaukee, yeah. But then they play them again I think it's like the fifth game of the year they play them at the Garden. So
the main reason I don't like the Bucks is just because they signed Greg Monroe.
Of course.
Everybody made fun of the Knicks going after Greg Monroe. July 1, the Knicks are going to go after Greg Monroe. And he can't play defense, whatever. He's got a big butt. Phil Jackson's an idiot for liking guys with big butts. Blah, blah, all this bullshit. And then fucking Milwaukee does it, and what a stroke of genius. Oh, my goodness, a genius move. It's fucking bullshit. The guy fucking sucks. He's a terrible fucking defender. You guys know last year I fucking was like, please, no God, if we sign him, to me, if we gave him a max deal like they give him, and not only that, it was a shitty max deal. It was a two-year max where he can opt out in 2 years and really get paid in 2017 if he ends up being good. It's like, that's why he took that deal. It's because that deal is it's a bottom-line money-making deal for him. And maybe Phil was smart enough to say, why lock ourselves in to give him an out in 2 years? And anyway, why I don't like it.
Guys, I got to run, but I just want to just say thank you again for giving me the time. It's great to talk to all you guys. It was great to see J.R. Smith struggle in the finals. That made my summer. I'm going to the game Friday. They're playing in D.C., so I'll be sure to come back and report to you guys. And I hope you guys are doing this as much as possible, and you guys will get me through. So I love you.
All right, man. Talk to you soon. Bro. Thanks.
All right, man.
Peace.
Hey, Frank, could you bleep me out?
What did you say?
Did you bleep me out there?
No, why?
No, I think
just went on
a terrible
rant of curse.
I just,
That's all right. It's after 10 o'clock. This is a family program, but, the first hour is for families, the second hour is for men.
There you go.
So
there you go.
You're throwing an F-bomb here or there, that's fine, whatever.
But you know what? I know where you're coming from, Frank. They have all the intangibles to be a great defensive team. I hear you. I'm just annoyed with the Monroe thing. That's all.
Right.
Leave it at that.
I know. I know. You. I know. And from day one, you were against Monroe. You know, I think you know people definitely can't say, oh, you know, Sean just didn't want Greg Monroe. No, you were against Greg Monroe for, you know, as long as the rumors were Greg Monroe is coming to New York. You know, and
yeah,
and I'm happy he didn't come because that one move probably doesn't get the Knicks like two or three of those pieces that we talked about before. You know, and I think by being as, you know, as bad as they were last year, we need to accumulate talent. And I think we, you know, if we got Monroe, that would have limited us, you know, in other spots. And I think drafting Porzingis kind of changes, you know, like if you were to go guard, if you were to go point guard in the first round, you know, I think they may have targeted free agency a little bit different, but, you know, Porzingis being that stretch four, being that possible, you know, up tempo, spread him out five eventually, maybe someday. You know, signing Greg Monroe really isn't the smartest thing to do. So I'm glad that they did not.
And you're also going to have an asset next year in that Spanish kid, that Hernan Gomez.
Oh yeah,
right. Oh,
so
yes.
You're going to have someone like him come into this team, or possible, you know, trade pawn. They say he would have been a first round pick this year if he came out. So
yeah,
right.
You know, they got enough going on. Let's see what they can do with it.
Well, I mean, what a great
move.
Yeah, and Hardaway for Grant. We didn't get a chance to talk about that. Shocked for you guys that we were able to add Grant for Hardaway. I mean, you guys liked the move, right?
I like the move. Yeah. I mean, he hasn't played a game yet, but I definitely like the move. It's kind of more what they need than the player. So it's a good deal for the Knicks, I think. I mean, as long as he produces.
Yeah, I think it's a good move. I mean, the thing is, though, it's always a question when you trade something for an asset that you don't exactly know what the asset's going to be like 2 years from now.
Yeah.
I mean, if you remember last summer when we were, you know, when we were talking about Summer League, yeah, Tim Hardaway Jr. was the best player in Summer League 2 years ago.
Yeah, he was.
You know, and we were excited. And I kid you not, I was looking at some of the notes from some of our first shows last year to try and get some content off of. And the one thing that I talked about was like I had Tim Hardaway star. This has to be the year. You know, when was that Knicks second year player going to go from a good rookie season to a good sophomore season and then build on that? Because we didn't see that with Landry Fields. We didn't see that with Amon Shumpert. We didn't see that with Tim Hardaway Jr. When is that going to come? And I think, you know, Galloway is certainly going to be, you know, someone we need to watch this year. And then obviously the development of Porzingis and Jeremy Grant. But, you know, when is the Knicks organization going to take someone, you know, and develop them into a player, because they haven't done that in a couple of years. So that's something that Phil and the coaching staff need to do.
Yeah, I mean, you can go to a lot of teams that have players that kind of come out of nowhere and become very good NBA players. You know, and look at someone like a Draymond Green. Nobody expected him to become what he's become. Well, and, you know, you can get pick 6th or 7th or 20th or in the 30s. When you just become an all-star over a season or two, then you have something. And the Knicks haven't capitalized on that. None of the players have become that for New York. And that's really have been their downfall, because if Shumpert became what everyone thought he was going to become, we wouldn't be having this conversation about Shumpert, about the negative, you know, thing with Shumpert. So, I mean, it can happen. The question is, will it? And do we have the luck for it to happen?
Sure. So, Tom, What exactly excites you the most about this Knicks team? You know, and what are you looking forward to most?
I want to see how far they can go this year, and I want to see how well they run the triangle with this offseason, you know, having all the time in the world to practice it. You know, we haven't heard much how they're developing it. I mean, I haven't, and they really haven't touched on it. You know, they're just saying, oh, yeah, still running the triangle offense and practice, blah, blah, blah. I want to see if they come out and every set they're running the triangle. I want to see how effective it is with this team. So
yeah,
I don't know, so many things.
Derek Fisher has a big job to do this year. I mean, he really has to.
Yeah.
He really has to get the rotation set
and stick with guys and really preach defense. You talk shit on defense during preseason and training camp about you have to do this, you have to do that. But all these guys are going to be committed to play defense under this coach. He has a big job to do. And if he doesn't do well this year, then, you know, if you go around another 17-win season, you know, then where is he as a coach, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And, you know, it's sad to say, but, I mean, you know, he hasn't been an assistant coach before. He came right in, and now he's a head coach. He was a great team leader as a player. But, you know, there comes a time when being a team leader, you know, isn't all it's cracked up to be, and you need to be able to develop and manage and do different things. And some guys are cut out for that, and some guys aren't. And, you know, yeah, if he had, you know, the Golden State Warriors roster from last year, would he be the same coach that, you know, that Steve Kerr was? Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. But he did some things last year that made me scratch my head. You know, and I'm interested to see how he does. That's one of my biggest concerns with this team is the leadership.
Yeah, cool. No, I think Derek Fisher, man, it's down to him. If the Knicks win, I'd say less than 25 games, then you have a very serious problem on your hands because, like you said, everyone's been saying, that is so important in terms of figuring out the lineups, not only him leading, but figuring out the lineups, figuring out the defensive philosophy that's going to work. I mean, we're the second worst defensive team in the league last year. At least Philly was a middle of the pack defensive team. And,
yeah.
And you know, like, we'll know a lot more. Yeah, we'll know a lot more by the end of the year about if this guy can really do it. So it'll be interesting, man.
I mean, he's got no excuses at this point because he's got all new players that wanted to come here or got drafted here or you know, something like that. So he has no excuse this year. He can't say, well, I don't have five All-Stars. I mean, I think he has a solid team. I think they can be a good defensive team. Nobody's going to say that. Nobody's going to say, hey, they're going to be a good team. Everyone's going to say they're going to stink because that's the easy thing to do. And then when they're good, they're going to say, oh, we're surprised. So you never know. I always say this to you guys. You know, a couple of years ago, Atlanta was battling the Knicks for the eighth spot, and they ended up winning the East last year. Nobody saw that coming. No one said that they were going to be a great team, not one person. And then even, 2 years ago, everyone thought that Toronto was going to tank for Wiggins, and they ended up winning their division. No one expected them to be good, not even their own GM.
Right. I remember that.
So, you know, nobody knows. That's why I would get angry. But all these conversations everybody has, like everyone's predicting. Nobody knows. You have to remember, everybody thought the Yankees were going to be good. Nobody thought the Mets were going to be good this year. And look at them. So, look, it's all clicks and selling newspapers and all that shit. But, you know, they have to play the games. And they if they want to be a good team, they got to play defense. And I think they can be a 500 team. I really do. Crazy to say.
So, you know, with that, let's go into our Fast Five. It's 10:15 here on the East Coast. Let's get our Fast Five in. I'll say a question. All three of you guys give me an answer, and then we'll get out of here tonight. How's that sound?
Sweet. Cool. Great.
All right. First question. Over under 35.5 wins for the Knicks this year?
Over.
Under. Good. Okay. Porzingis will play more than 20 minutes per game, yes or no?
After the first 20 games.
I say 20, yeah. I say, when you say more, you mean 20 or more?
20 or more minutes per game.
Yeah, I say 20 or more, yes.
I say under that for the first 20 games, then after that, he's playing more than 20 minutes.
Okay. Sean?
Yes.
Okay, and I say yes, too. All right, fill in the blank. Carmelo Anthony will have to score blank and average blank rebounds for the Knicks to be successful in 2015.
Jesus 70.
Shut up.
I say 24, 6, and 4 will be awesome for me. I will be so pumped about that.
Sean?
I think he's going to average 26 and 7. and three assists.
I would take that as well.
I say 21 and 5.
Okay.
I would take
and
that.
I say 23 and 6.
Shoot.
I think
whoa.
23
wow.
points and six rebounds.
How about assists, though? But Carmelo's a good passer when he wants to be.
Yeah, I think he'll average 4 assists.
That would be tremendous.
Four and change. I think there was a stat 2 years ago when they won, 37 games, that when he had more than 6 assists in a game, the Knicks were 32 and 5 or something like that. Like, it was a crazy number. Like, it was,
yeah.
I just pulled that out of my ass, but it was a crazy number that there when he had more than 6 assists. All right, so next question. One word to describe this Knicks offseason would be blank.
Versatile.
Okay. Sean?
Encouraging.
Okay. Tom?
Successful.
And my word is acceptable.
Okay, that's a good word.
Besides Carmelo Anthony, the most important Nick this year will be?
Oh, boy.
Robin Lopez.
Derek
Porzingis.
I'm gonna say Porzingis as well. I think if he's good, they're good, and I think if he's not as advertised, then they're in trouble.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So yeah, that was pretty good. We're still trying to get some rust off there, but overall, pretty decent show. So we have to do this again. How about that?
Yeah,
sounds good.
Pick a date.
What's next Tuesday look like? Do the Knicks play on Tuesday? Do we know?
Yeah, I think they play Tuesday.
Do they?
I know they play. I know they play Wednesday, Friday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. I believe.
No, I think it's Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday. I think though. Am I wrong?
Is it Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday?
Wednesday, Friday for sure. Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. Let's see.
Hey, if it's Friday, Saturday, the wife's not going to like that. That's going to be tough for me.
It's a Wednesday.
For DVR.
Wednesday, Friday, and then Monday the 12th. And then the 16th is what? Is that Friday? And then Friday.
That's a Friday. Yep.
So we can do a Tuesday then.
And then
we could
Saturday
do Tuesday
at Charlotte. Yeah.
And then they don't have a Tuesday game until November 10th. So that looks pretty
beautiful.
Good. All right, fellas.
Sounds good.
Well, it was good to get back in the saddle with you guys. And we'll do it again soon.
All right. Talk to you
later,
guys.
Frank. Awesome.
Awesome.
Talk to you guys later.
All right, take it easy,
count
guys.
Count your money, Tom. Count the money.
Count it. Singles, all in sync.
Right? Right now, Tom's
just
laying on a pallet of hundreds.
Like Duck,
right,
Mc,
Tom?
What is it, Duck McScrooge? I'm just like swimming in my money.
He's swimming in money on top of your bed.
There's a room
of laying
coins.
On top of it
right
now.
Swimming it.
Your back
I
is
can't,
all
can't
the money under your mattress, and you're just talking to us.
What I do.
All right, guys.
All right,
well, you guys have a fantastic evening.
Good night. Go Yankees.
Go Yankees.
Right. Later.
Not looking good.
I know.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
But.
And this was the Knicks at Night show. Glad to have everybody back again. All the listeners, we appreciate you. Ron from Baltimore, thanks for calling in. Sean, Tom, and Peter, really appreciate the good conversation tonight with some Knicks basketball. This show is available for download following the completion of our show tonight on Stitcher and iTunes. Check us out. Follow me at Frank Nutt, at Tom Baffa, at SAkinu34, and at Peter Aturi, or Peter underscore Aturi, I'm sorry. Follow us for all our latest news and upcoming shows. This has been the Knicks at Night show. Peace out.